The economy is much in the news these days. The market has come back a little bit. Where do you think it's going, Mr. Humphrey, and will it be an important issue this fall?
Well, first, we're all very grateful, of course, and very pleased that the market has rebounded considerably in the last two or three days. I think it was up, what I heard today, the Dow Jones average, up about 14 points. But it's still about 40 points lower than when the Cambodia decision was announced. And as you know, the market stood at about 950 in round numbers in January 1969. It's now down to about, what is it, about 670 or something like that at this particular point. So the stock market is has a good deal, had a lot of liquidation. I don't think we ought to try to frighten people. And I hope that it doesn't drop a bit. I hope that it stops now and that it starts to climb up. Because basically our economy ought to be strong, and it is, in terms of productivity, the skill of our workers, the efficiency of our management and plant. But we do have this strange combination, gentlemen, of inflation and recession. Now, this is unusual.
Is this peculiar to a situation where a war is going on?
Yes, it is in a sense, yes. But to have unemployment rising at this time, at the same time that you have pressure on the economy, which results in inflation, is really rather abnormal, and I think we're not accustomed to it. We're somewhat dubious as to how to deal with it. I just got to be very frank about it. I think that the refusal of the administration to have wage price guidelines, standards by which we can judge the activity of labor and management, was wrong. I think that when President Nixon abolished the wage price guidelines and refused to use the power and the influence of his office to try to hold down prices and to hold down wages, that is, to have some balance between the two, I think this was most unfortunate. When you see the price of copper going up, for example, 40-45% in the last year and a half, when you see those different products, there were some 20-some major products in which the president's office used what you would call jawboning and the presidential influence and the Council of Economic Advisors working to hold these prices down. Then you see those prices being held down to an annual growth rate of about 2%. And then when the jawboning is taken away, in other words, when the president just says, well, look, I'm going to let the market run itself, you see these prices skyrocket. Then you know that there is something that can be done. You know that what they call presidential persuasion, the use of presidential influence, prestige, jawboning with the major industries to hold prices and wages in some balance does work. Now, I feel that you cannot rely strictly on tight money and high interest. You can't do that and expect to have any kind of economic balance. This is very difficult for small business that can't borrow money, can't pay the interest. It's practically killed off our housing industry. And when you, by the way, when you stop housing, you not only hurt building, but appliances, furniture, carpets, everything that goes along with it. You have tight money and high interest, and only the rich and only the powerful can afford to get it. For example, we're building right at the present time a high rate of commercial construction, office buildings, all kinds of commercial construction. But no houses. And the reason is that the large companies, the big corporate structure, can afford to borrow this money, and they just plow back into the price of the rent, the cost of the interest. In fact, high interest has become a factor in the inflation. Instead of holding it down, it's increasing it. Now, you say what to do? Well, first of all, I think number one that you do is for you have what we call an incomes policy. You try to hold, as best you can, wages and prices in some balance, and you use every voluntary means that you can bring about. Secondly, I think you ought to have a wage and price board that acts in a voluntary capacity. I have proposed this some 2 years ago, that the president set up a kind of conciliation board, management, labor, and the public, to work with industry, to work with the unions, to try to preach some doctrine of responsibility and of reasonableness, and using what we call guidelines to hold the price and hold the wage line. And then I think you also have to take a good look at your tax program. And this administration didn't come in with a tax program. It didn't do so, I think, primarily because It had made some promises in the election to the oil industry in particular that it simply couldn't afford to fulfill. And when you come in with saying that you're going to repeal the surtax at a time of inflation, when you come in and when you refuse to give guidance on a tax program, you buy trouble. Now, there are things that we can do, and I understand now that some of the big businessmen in New York and elsewhere that have met with the president have said practically what I've said. As a matter of fact, I was in New York 3 weeks ago meeting with some of the top people in the financial community to get some guidance, to see what they were thinking, and I've met with some of our top economists. I try to keep myself informed. And what I've said here today is what you would call the moderate thinking of moderate people, namely that you can't let things drift. You can't just rely on tight money and high interest. You've got to rely on a combination of tax policy, fiscal policy, and monetary policy. You have to rely on guidelines. You have to rely on presidential influence. You have to rely on mobilization of public opinion. And you maybe have to set up some form of wage price voluntary guidance.
Okay, we'll take some more calls in just a moment. Hubert Humphrey, our guest on Party Line. And this portion brought to you by Midwest Federal.
Of course, Midwest Federal will be on hand to bring you baseball again tonight. And say, speaking of baseball, there are some good averages going. Even Louis Tiant is batting over 400. But you know you can bat 1,000% at Midwest Federal?
That's right.
How about that? Get paid every day. Now you ask, what does that mean? Well, that means that with the Midwest 5% Passbook Savings Account, and this is only one of many savings accounts, the interest on your savings accumulates every single day.
Even weekends and holidays, like this holiday.
Yeah.
That's right. You can withdraw the interest anytime. Don't have to wait.
No. Don't wait until the end of the quarter to receive every penny of the money that's compounded in interest.
In other words, you get paid every day.
That's it.
That's good.
That is good.
Midwest Federal. Say, 74 degrees right now, 20 minutes before the hour, and this lady's been waiting, and we thank you for your patience, and go ahead and ask Mr. Humphrey your question, please.
Go ahead.
Hello, Professor Humphrey.
Yes, ma'am.
This is V.C. of Burnsville.
Hello.
And I was wondering if you would outline a few steps that local civic organizations could take to make known to their national legislators that we would like pollution control on a national level so that industry couldn't play location against one state to the other.
Well, I'm very pleased you've asked. I spoke at your high school some time ago out there, and I've been doing so around the state. One of the things that is really needed, of course, is a uniform standard on air pollution and water pollution, that is for industrial waste as well as organic waste, all across the country by federal statute. This would mean that industry could not flee from one state to another because of so-called pollution control measures. In other words, the standards have to be high, and it means then that a large industry that may feel that a state law is being too tough on them will find that the federal law is every bit as firm, and that it doesn't do any good to try to pressure, saying that if you enforce a state law, we're going to go to the neighboring state or someplace else. So number one, let's take a look at all of our federal law on air pollution, water pollution, on land pollution. Let's take a look at all of it and see whether or not it's modern and up-to-date and whether or not the penalties are adequate and whether or not the incentives are proper. Because you need the carrot and the stick approach here. On the one hand, you have to offer to industry, I speak now of industrial pollution for a moment, you have to offer certain kinds of tax incentives and advantages, a good deal of research that's sponsored and paid for cooperatively between government and industry, to modernize the technology of the modern industrial plant so that it doesn't spew out this pollution of air into the air and into the streams and in the lakes. And then, as has been said by Secretary Hickel, if they do pollute, you charge them on the basis of their pollution. In other words, the polluters pay. You actually have, you meter the kind of pollution that goes into the water and goes into the air. Now, this can be done. I think there's some other things that we need to do. We need to coordinate our state law with our federal law. And I would hope that during this coming month, these coming months, when members of Congress are up for election and members of the state legislature, that civic groups, young people and others, and by the way, I've urged that we have a community coalition for a clean environment that brings in business, labor, young people, civic groups, that we ask these legislators to take a look at all of our state statutory law, to bring it up to date, to see what we can do to coordinate the state law with the federal law and vice versa. I've also suggested that we have regular weather reports, so to speak. What is the air pollution count each day when you give the weather report?
Yeah.
Let's have from our state health department or our state conservation department. Let's have a report at least once a week or once a month on the pollution of our rivers and of our lakes around the state. This the reason for this is it calls it to people's attention. And then I think another thing could be done. We could have the governor's office of this state provide or give to cities and communities that do an unusual job in pollution control of everything from garbage, solid waste, to air pollution and water pollution, an award. Give them an E award, an E flag. You know, you give defense plants an E award for excellence in the production of defense goods. Why don't we give communities an E award for excellence in environment control? And I think this would do a great deal to promote competition, friendly cooperation and competition amongst our peoples. There are a lot of other little things that we've suggested that can be done, and I hope that some of them will be.
And we thank Hal Greenwood and all the nice people at Midwest Federal for bringing us this portion of Party Line. Don't forget now, Midwest has many savings plans available, ranging from 5% to 7.5%. But safety, they have never once missed a dividend payment since 1891.
Just
that's when they started.
One thing nice about Midwest Federal, too, whenever we have a guest on Party Line that we feel we have to use every possible minute, they've said, you go ahead, just say a word, Midwest Federal, and relinquish our time.
You're beautiful. It's 16 before 3, 74 degrees. You ask, what kind of people live in a Berkshire townhouse? Well, townhouse living is for just about everybody and anybody. It's especially for you who want to own your own home, but don't have to work at it all the time. You know what I mean? Taking care of it. For various reasons, there are many who have had enough of taking care of the lawn and other jobs that have to be done with your home. Then there are those who travel a lot, maybe have a weekend cabin, or go away for extended periods for one reason or another. With a townhouse, you just walk out. Don't worry about it. Plenty of people living right there at Berkshire. Nobody knows who's home and who's away. It's beautiful. So you ask, well, why not an apartment? Well, for one thing, with a townhouse, you own your own home. You buy it. You get your advantages of appreciation of your own property. And there are tax advantages, too. That's right. Berkshire townhouses, most of all, are quality, and what a gorgeous setting. Beautiful wooded Southwest Bloomington, 102nd and Normandale South. They're open 1 to 9 today, 1 to 6 tomorrow and Sunday. Berkshire townhouses, 102nd and Normandale.
This is the Party Line on CCO Radio. Hubert Humphrey, our guest. Mr. Humphrey, you mentioned young people a moment ago, and, of course, students have been in the news much of late. Do you think the student unrest will jeopardize the chances of the 19-year-old vote amendment that Minnesota voters will vote on this fall?
Well, it is said that out in Oregon, where that amendment was defeated, that one of the reasons for its defeat was the attitude of the public about student protest and unrest and violence. We haven't had much of that in our state compared to others, and I hope people will keep it in proper balance. We have young people that are restless. We have young people that want to change things. We always did, I guess. I hope that Roger and Charlie, I bet that at age 18 you wanted to change a lot of things. You still do.
I still do.
And so do I. I'll tell you. In fact, I've got some big changes I'd like to see made. What I think we ought to face up to is that our young people today are living, as I said earlier, in a very troubled time, and they're living in a period of war and of uncertainty, and this all affects them. But there's no excuse for violence. And I think this is where we got to draw the line, gentlemen. It's one thing to have legitimate dissent. It's one thing to advocate change, and we can do it through nonviolent and peaceful means. We can do it through political action. We can do it through mass meetings. You can do it through peaceful marches. I think we have to recognize that's one of the rights of protest that we have. We can do it through peaceful protest. But when people, young or old, whether they're black or white, whether they're urban or rural, when they decide to take things in their own hand and threaten people, destroy property, commit acts of violence, which sometimes results in tragic death, or at least in casualty, that this cannot be condoned, and it is not a form of legitimate exercise of the right of dissent. It's nothing more or less than criminal behavior and violent behavior, which has to be dealt with on that basis. Now, there's, fortunately, as I said, in our state, we've had very little of it. By the way, I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Dr. Malcolm Moose at the University of Minnesota. I wonder if people in this state appreciate what this man does and what he's gone through. This is one of the largest universities in the world. And by the way, one of the 10 best. You know, Minnesotans don't realize sometimes what you have and what we have. This is one of the 10 largest in the world and one of the 10 best. It has a huge graduate school. It brings students in from all over the world. So that every social pressure that's to be found at Columbia or Berkeley or any place else or Ohio State is right here. And Dr. Malcolm Moose and his administration, I think, have showed the resiliency, the sense of balance, and yet firmness that has been required to maintain, thank goodness, a reasonably orderly campus. And there have been some troubles, but nothing like you've seen other places. And might I say, I work at McAllister College, too, and Dr. Arthur Fleming, the president of that college, as other presidents, and I'll just look around our state at all the different colleges. We have active young people here, healthy, strong. They come in from all over America to attend our colleges. But for some reason or another, we have in the main, not every time, but in the main, we've been able to direct their energies, and they themselves have directed their energies primarily through what we would call nonviolent protest, and now more effectively through political action and civic action. I feel good about this. I really do. And I hope that in Minnesota that we will honor this kind of responsible conduct of our young people here with voting for lowering the voting age to 19. It's my view that if you want young people to act responsibly, give them responsibility. Now, you're asking young men 19 to serve in the armed forces. We send them to Vietnam to serve in the armed forces, to die for their country. Now, listen, if they're responsible enough to carry an M16 rifle, if they're responsible enough to be sent 8 to 10,000 miles away from home to represent this country in Peace Corps work and the military uniform and 101 other things, they're responsible enough to be able to vote at age 19. And I want to give them that chance. I think it'll be good for the country.
Our guest today, Hubert H. Humphrey. It's now 11 minutes before 3. It's 74 degrees. We'll be getting traffic reports, you know, throughout this afternoon, so stick around for that. We know many of you are listening in your car radios right now, heading for your vacation spot.
Ah, boy.
That's nice. And Harry Peterson of the Minnesota Highway Patrol will be right here in our CCO newsroom in contact with all others. There are helicopters and other aircraft, as well as patrol cars around the area, and our AAA representatives will be on hand, too. We'll have more questions in just a moment.
For Lunds, Boone and Erickson.
And if you gals ever feel lazy but hungry, and you know you've got dinner to fix, Lunds have a great suggestion for
you. That's right, Roger. All you have to do is light the oven. A homemade meatloaf. Not cooked, but packed right into a bake-it-yourself pan. Just about as perfect as a meatloaf can be. Not too dry, not too wet, not too crumbly, not too firm. Just right.
Yeah, and those Lund cooks make it in the Lund kitchen out of the same good veal and pork and beef that you get right up in the Lund meat counters. They mix in the spices, and you don't have to do one thing but start the oven. Serve it with any kind of sauce you want to, tomato, mushroom, any old kind.
You can even serve it just plain if you want to, and then that's a real winner. If you can manage to have any left, it's even good cold. I love it cold.
Makes good meatballs, too.
Yeah, this is great bachelor cooking. That's Lund's with 4 stores, New Country Village Shopping Center out west, and that's Penn Avenue in Crosstown, 50th and France, and in the Lake Calhoun area, Lake and Hennepin. Lund stores.
Vice President, I'm calling you Vice President Humphrey. See, by the way, before we...
Mayor Humphrey, Senator Humphrey, Professor Humphrey.
Are you sure there isn't something you want to announce or anything this afternoon? Do you?
Can I ask
you... Well, I had my birthday 2 days ago.
Hey, that's
happy birthday.
2 days late.
That's
today
right.
Is John Kennedy's birthday, by the way.
The 53rd,
it's also Bob Hope's birthday today.
Uh-huh.
Bob Hope's wife and his birthday is on the 27th, and I told him, of course, that people that have their birthday on the 27th are very fortunate. And he says, well, I want you to know my birthday is on the 29th. It was John Kennedy's birthday.
Yes.
I used to have a lot of fun talking with President Kennedy about our birthdays, and I said, look, Mr. President, mine's on the 27th, yours is on the 29th, we're both Democrats, I'm your legislative leader, your majority whip. And, you know, with your birthday being the 29th, no one pays any attention to mine. Why don't we do it this way? Why don't we compromise on the 28th and you put on a party in the White House? Didn't make it, though. Once we did. Yeah, once we did.
Briefly, I know you want to say a word about pollution and regarding Memorial Day, but before you do that,
How do you feel about the executive and the legislative? Now, you were a vice president in the legislative. You were a senator. There has been some talk recently of the Senate not being asked about certain things. For instance, the Cambodian situation. How do you feel about that?
Well, there's a historic rivalry between the legislative and the executive. This is not particularly new. If you're a student of history, you know that this has been going on all through our history, and it's particularly true of the Senate. This was true when Woodrow Wilson was president. It was true when Franklin Roosevelt was president.
Teddy Roosevelt, there was a very similar situation.
Very similar situation. The Senate, you see, when you're a senator, and I was one for 16 years, you have tremendous authority. But you really do not have the basic responsibility that a president has. When you're a president, you have both authority and responsibility. When you're vice president, all you have is responsibility. You just don't have any authority. You may kid yourself into believing it, but you don't. I used to say that we call it Humphrey's Law, because whatever authority you had was given to you by the president, and he who giveth can taketh away. So no matter who's vice president of the United States, and I don't try to be personal about this, what a vice president does pretty much is what the president of the United States wants him to do. You're a member of a team. It's like a marriage, and it's one in which you can't get a divorce. You are married there for 4 years, and you either go along and you do your job, or the president of the United States can just cut you right on off. That's all there's to it. And I often feel that when Mr. Agnew is doing the things that he does, which some people like and others don't, but whatever it is, he's doing it because the president of the United States asks him to do it. He encourages him to do it. And when I did the things that I did in many things, I was encouraged by the president. For example, I headed the Youth Opportunity Council, and we got jobs for young people in the summer. I was shocked to find out the other day that in a year and a half there hasn't been a single meeting of the Youth Opportunity Council. And here we come up this year with 400,000 more young people looking for jobs. We have a rate of unemployment, I found out yesterday in Los Angeles, of 45% amongst teenagers. And amongst black teenagers, it's even higher. Now, these are some of the problems that you face, and these are some of the things you ought to be working on. This is much more important than having a fight with you fellows about the media.
Say, just a minute before you go, this is the Memorial Day holiday. Yeah. Did you have some word about that?
Yes. This is where we're really going to test whether we mean what we say about pollution. Let's see whether or not we can keep the side roads from being all littered up with beer cans and picnic trash. Let's take a good look after Memorial Day, how our parks look, and let's see whether or not after we've come back from fishing and having our fun, whether or not we can't do something to make our lakes a little better and to purify our streams and to do a little better job of making Minnesota the finest clean air, clean water, clean living state in the Union, and I think we can.
We might say, Mr. Humphrey, that you look as fit as we've ever seen you.
Oh, let me tell you, this being out of office is physically wonderful. I can't say that it's emotionally all I'd like, but it's great for the physical well-being. I want to thank you gentlemen very much. Everybody loves you around here. You really put on a wonderful show. I give you a good commercial, Roger and Charlie. It's really great, and you do a lot of good for all of us, and keep getting this word of confidence and encouragement to our people.
Will you run for the Senate?
What was that, sir?
News next on CCO. Thank you. Yes?
Say, by the way, I have a letter from Rudy I want to read after the news.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Humphrey.
Thank you.
WCCO Radio News. Dow Jones closes above 700 again. This is Chuck Lilligren reporting. The New York stock market has closed sharply higher for the third straight day. Trading was moderately active. Industrials closed at 700.44, up 16.29. Transportation up 0.96, utilities up 1.09, on an estimated sales volume of 14.5 million shares. I'll have more news in just a minute.
In addition to downtown St. Paul and Minneapolis, Twin City Federal and Benny Savings and Loan has offices all over our metropolitan area.
That's nice. I just love to travel.
Let's start with Anoka. We have a new office there.
Gee, that's great. You know, my three favorite cities are London, Paris, and Anoka.
Then on to the TCF office in Excelsior.
Yeah, that's right.
Twin City Federal has offices in Southdale, Edina, Roseville, and Robbinsdale.
Yes, that's right.
Our 56th and Nicollet office is very popular. And in all Twin City Federal suburban offices, there is free coffee every Friday.
Oh, darn it, today is Thursday.
We're going to have to bring Jack back to visit Twin City Federal's new Fridley branch office. It opens early in June in the Skywood Mall. If you live in or around Fridley, plan on making this new Twin City Federal office your thrift action headquarters with the famous twin clocks, flash time, and...